Hello, Liberty lovers, and welcome to the Liberty Mike podcast, broadcasting from an undisclosed location in the heart of Dixie. I'm Michael, and I'm here with Liberty Larry.
How's it going?
So I don't know where to start.
Let's start with the fact that you're wearing a Jack Daniel's shirt, yet you have no drink.
Well, I have a Jack Daniel's shirt on because this is kind of a throwaway shirt.
Ah, just like Jack Daniel's, right?
I'm not actually a big fan.
Yeah, I'm aware.
I mean, I went to college, so I've had more than my share of Jack and Cokes.
Yeah.
But then I, you know, drank other things and realized that when it comes down to it, Jack Daniel's kind of sucks.
It's not a premier whiskey or bourbon.
No.
As it were.
It's not a bourbon at all.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What is it then?
It's Tennessee whiskey.
Tennessee whiskey. No, so they have their own classification then?
Yeah, there's a different... I think the main difference is actually how it's filtered.
Okay.
Because they do the charcoal filtering.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the distinctive feature. There's only a few Tennessee whiskeys. And like George Dickel would be the other big one.
Yeah.
When I started to get kind of pedantic about it, I did get irritated when I would go into places and ask for a bourbon and they would say Jack Daniel's okay, and I'm like, well,
it's education time.
It's not even a bourbon. But I try not to push that anymore. What are you drinking anyway?
I grabbed the Russell's.
Okay. Well, you're drinking it out of a Jack Daniel's glass, I see.
I am.
That is a glass I have to hand wash, by the way.
I like it because it's small. It's not a big, fat glass because I only poured a small drink.
Yeah. So. It's got gold leaf, so I can't throw it in the
washing machine.
Dishwasher.
I like the size of it.
Well, I'm glad you got what you liked.
Me too. It got ice and everything, man. Yeah.
Well, I'm not drinking because I have not been well for like a while now, it seems like.
We were kind of lucky to record tonight.
Yeah, they gave me a new pill. It's kind of working.
Yeah, maybe.
I definitely know when it wears off, though. It lasts about 6 hours apparently.
Wow.
I took one at like 8 o'clock last night, and then I woke up about 2:30 this morning just hurting.
No.
But it's a start. I'd only been taking it for a day, so
maybe it's just gonna take a while to build up in your system. And get going.
Yeah.
Start healing you.
Yeah, let's hope it does that. So been getting some questions here and there about why we're not addressing the impeachment stuff.
Ah, yes.
And the short answer is because there is no impeachment.
Yeah. You know, I watched some stuff today on it. They're not there yet as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, well, they haven't done anything. Like,
nothing.
Their official... start their resolution that's supposedly the official start of the impeachment. It's not a start of impeachment. It has no legal bearing whatsoever. And so that's why, and I don't know if Bolton showed up today. Nobody really expected him to. But what they keep saying in the news, and I imagine they'll say this about him if he didn't show today also, is that these people that are backing the president are ignoring subpoenas. But it's not a subpoena.
Yeah.
It's a request to show up. And the reason it's not a subpoena, just a request to show up, is because there is no impeachment.
Yeah. They haven't voted. And I've been saying this from the beginning. If they want to do this, they need to do it. They need to put it to a vote and do it. And I think they're going to. I mean, I think in the next week or so. We'll see. I mean, I think in the next week or so, we'll see. They're supposed to have public hearings next week. And so there'll actually be something to talk about when they have some public hearings, when we can actually hear from these people and see what they have to say. Mm-hmm. But if it's no more than what we already know now, mm-hmm. there's just nothing there.
It's just theater. They don't want to actually bring impeachment proceedings against the president. I think that it would be far more damaging to the Democrats than it is to the Republicans.
It's not going anywhere. They're going to have some serious, real something mm-hmm. to actually follow through with an impeachment, to actually impeach the president.
Yeah, it's some of the other stuff that's come up that I do find a little bit interesting about it. This basic idea that there's a problem, even if if true,
yeah,
that there is a problem with Trump asking a leader of a foreign government to do an investigation into an American citizen. Well, we know that that's not a problem. I mean, that's a thing that happens all the time. So really what the issue is that it's Joe Biden.
That it's a campaign rival. That's right. That's the language they keep using on the news.
Yeah.
Investigation into a campaign rival.
So it brings us to something else, I think, too. And that's the... So we were talking about equality a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
And I was saying the whole idea of equality is just a pipe dream in and of itself. There's no equality to strive for. And I want to amend that a little bit. Because that's not entirely true. I think that if you're looking for any kind of equality, it's going to be equality under the law.
Like
judicial equality, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Or equality of justice. I don't know that justice is a real meaningful term
But under the law, I think, is a good way to put it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the legal system should be equal for everybody.
And I would contend that if you want... That if you want economic equality too, but if you want judicial equality, that a growing government is a counter to that.
Yeah.
That the growing government exacerbates any kind of inequality, and I would say that this is a really good example of that.
Yeah.
Because what they're saying here is that once somebody becomes a politician that is in play in any way, that they can no longer be investigated for any wrongdoing.
Yeah.
That there's some kind of problem with that. What happens in a growing government in terms of judicial equality is that you end up with a political elite who the rules don't apply to.
Yeah.
And I think that this is an example of that. And I find it particularly interesting in light of current events worldwide when we're looking at Ukraine... specifically is having trouble with corruption. And that's actually what a lot of this was about.
Yeah.
I mean, based on the testimony that I read, not heard, because they haven't, you know,
released any of it.
This is another thing, by the way. If you're going to have an impeachment inquiry, whatever that means, doing it behind closed doors and then leaking the information that you think is appropriate for people to understand is really a poor way of doing it.
Yeah.
I think that it actually just adds to the idea that this is all just a show.
Yeah.
It doesn't give you any kind of sense that there's any kind of justice being done at all.
Yeah.
It sounds like secret courts and all the scary stuff that we don't like about governments to begin with.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, the issue actually at hand, it seems to be most of the time, the quid pro quo was, we'll give you this money, but you've got to root out corruption. Like, that's the thing that keeps coming up.
Yeah.
And Joe Biden or Hunter Biden is like the example that the president keeps going back to. But what the actual issue is we want you to root out corruption in your government.
Yeah.
And I would say that that's also the issue that's going on with all these protests in Iraq right now, is that they're complaining about corruption in their government.
Yeah.
And I do want to point out that these two places are two places that the U.S. government actively overthrew the existing government and put the current government in place, essentially.
And now the people are, or at least in Iraq, the people are rising up against that government.
Yeah.
And I looked, in fact, I saw today, in at least in reference to Iraq, like it's the young people that are in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
It's not...
Because they don't have any prospects.
Yeah. And that's they were interviewing, doing just kind of man on the street, like, while during these protests and stuff, and that's exactly what you said is what they were saying. They were like, "Look, yeah, I've got no future.
Yeah,
the way things stand here,
mm-hmm.
and we want to do something about it, and that's the only thing they know to do."
Yeah,
And
that's what happens. I mean, it takes some time. They pointed it out in the in the Declaration of Independence that people are more prone to suffer ills while ills are sufferable. I can't remember exactly what the language is, but it takes a lot before people are ready to actually revolt in any kind of active way.
Yeah.
But
once they do, it's no holes bar.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
I mean, it's the same kind of thing with, like, to draw a kind of a nasty parallel, I'd say, like, suicide.
Yeah.
You know, when people are complaining and down and depressed and so forth, you don't have to worry about them so much until they start with the idea that there's nothing for them. that there's nothing left, that they don't, you know, that they don't feel like there's any future, that there's no prospects, there's nothing they can do. When they start giving up in that way, that's when you have to start worrying about people. Yeah. And I think that it's the same kind of feeling that with people that have, that blame an outside source, really, that leads to this kind of revolt. But, you know, the point being that these two governments that we've created clearly both have real problems with corruption, that we did not create these wonderful, free, democratic, prosperous nations that we are trying to.
Yeah.
And that maybe that should give us some pause before we try and do it elsewhere.
Yeah.
Like, start thinking about what the results of our interventions are.
Well, because you can't create that. It has to happen organically.
Mm-hmm.
You can't force democracy or something like that on another country.
Yeah.
I mean, it just doesn't work.
I mean, think about the history that led to this country founding itself as the republic that it finally did.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't just people living here for a couple hundred years under British rule either.
Yeah.
I mean, it was. In fact, I would say, I would recommend, I think I have before, but I would recommend, go to YouTube, look up Chris Ann Hall, and what's the genealogy of the Constitution.
Mm.
And like, we saw this lecture live and it was fantastic.
Oh man, amazing.
But, you know, she goes back into the, you know, something like 800 years of history of common law and various written agreements between the people and the government in Great Britain who... you know, these ideas were developing over time.
Yeah.
And it took a long time for people to move out of this monarchical way of thinking. And the United States was a brand new thing.
Yeah. And they kind of, because that's in the lecture, that's kind of what she leads to in the end, is that we, you know, they took all of this knowledge and all of these experiments that had happened in these different places and put it all together.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was really the first time that had ever been done.
Mm-hmm. And it was only, I mean, you only have a few hundred years of a natural law and natural rights tradition.
Yeah.
That's a big part of the foundation of our Constitution.
Yeah.
These things happened over time, and it took people's experiences and history to lead to what this became.
Yeah.
And so you can't take people out of history and make it happen. Like, oh, yeah, well, we figured out this thing. Like, you guys should just do it our way.
Yeah.
Well, maybe their way of thinking about the world, it hasn't...
They're not there
isn't
yet.
In the same stage, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't mean that as in kind of a progressive idea in that, oh, well, we're more politically evolved than people in the Middle East or whatever.
Yeah.
They're just coming from a different point of view.
Yeah. Well, our experiences are different from theirs,
mm-hmm.
you know? I mean, and their cultures are different. And that has a lot to do with it, too.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Wow, we go way down the rabbit hole there.
Yeah, that started with impeachment.
Yeah. Well, there's just not much to say about the impeachment. And actually, like, going back to the idea that that you can't investigate Biden because he's a candidate now. Like, it doesn't matter any wrongdoing that he did in the past. He's a candidate now, so you can't look into it. And I know that the idea here is that, well, he's a rival candidate. At the same time, I don't know if you remember back when we were talking about Venezuela, really kind of at the beginning of this podcast. We spent a lot of time talking about Venezuela because that was the big thing of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still going on, but we're not as actively involved, it seems. We kind of gave up on the idea of throwing out, of getting at least getting Guaido in power.
Yeah.
But one of the reporters that I was looking at a lot during that time, because he was down there and he was involved, and he was down there reporting on the situation on the ground in Venezuela. He was also spending time up here at the Venezuelan embassy. That's Max Blumenthal is his name. Really good writer. I like his stuff. But he was recently charged with assault for some activity with no witnesses, essentially, that happened while he was defending the Venezuelan embassy here in the U.S.
Really?
And like, one of the protesters outside that was preventing food from entering the embassy and all this stuff says that he hit her or something like that.
Hmm.
That he and some other guy had gone down to try and get food in, and she was trying to prevent them, and they hit her and brought food in or something. Now, again, like I said, no witnesses, etc. This kind of seems like a retaliatory thing from some protester that just wants to, you know, stir cause some damage, and some other way. Well, you know, this is kind of drawing back. But here's the thing. So he's being charged with assault, but you're for this thing that may or may not have happened while he was defending the Venezuelan embassy in the U.S., which is the responsibility of the U.S. State Department actually to defend.
Absolutely.
And they weren't doing it. Yeah. And so the people at the State Department who either weren't doing their jobs or gave the order for people not doing their jobs, they're not liable in any way, apparently. Yeah. You got this political elite, government employees who aren't being charged with any kind of crime for what was definitely a crime, for absolutely intentionally refusing to uphold their responsibilities to defend the Venezuelan embassy in the U.S. Meanwhile, this reporter who was up there trying to help get food into the embassy to break essentially a siege of the Venezuelan embassy here, he's being charged with assault.
That's insane.
So, like, there's already this real divide between the political elite and their culpability, not their culpability, but how they're held accountable, their accountability, and other people. This is actually kind of one of these other things that the impeachment stuff has brought out. I don't know if you saw this, this video from the C-SPAN event where John McLaughlin and John Brennan were answering questions, I guess, essentially. And the moderator says something to former... Now, these are both former CIA directors.
Yep, yep.
And they says something to John McLaughlin about the Trump impeachment. And doesn't this reinforce Trump's narrative about the deep state trying to take him out? And so forth. And he replies, like, quote, "Thank God for the deep state."
Yeah, yeah. Just go right on out and admits it.
Yeah. And he goes on to say, you know, these are, like, good people just trying to uphold their duty and blah, blah, blah. And so I have a question about why are these people, like, he's talking about the military officers and government employees and the intelligence community and saying, you know, look, these are the people that are coming out against this and calling out this wrongdoing.
Yeah.
Which is kind of questionable, I think, to begin this with. And my questions are, you know, what makes these people inherently more trustworthy or deserving of more respect than any other citizen of this nation?
So when I listened to that, the first thing I thought was, so do these people... there's just this assumption that they don't have any self-interest at all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh, well, these are upstanding people who are dedicated to their job and blah, 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 blah. It's like, yeah, like you kind of forget the fact that they're still people. Like they have their own interest involved and, you know, that sways which way they go, you know?
This guy Chirimella, or however you say his name, that they think is the original leaker, registered Democrat, worked closely with John Brennan and Joe Biden, and you know so on. Yeah. Like this idea that that they're just servants of the public. That's all that they're there to do is just to serve. It made me laugh. Dave Smith had on one of his podcasts, Part of the Problem, last week. Said something about this idea that, you know, government employees are just servants of
just
the public.
Serving the people,
and he is like, if you think that Hillary Clinton is mad about losing the election because she's deprived of the opportunity to just serve the public, then, you know, I don't know, like that it didn't have anything to do with what she's, you know, this power or influence ruling over others, this authority, that it was only because she really, really wanted to serve. Then, you know, you're lost anyway. You're too already stuck in the statist kind of paradigm.
Exactly.
And the thing that really just, like, I laughed out loud.
And nobody believes that. I mean, nobody believes that that's why Hillary Clinton wants to be president. It's because she wants to serve. Yeah. Like, nobody believes that.
And that's the thing, is that when you start talking about specific people, nobody believes that.
Yeah.
But there's this idea that in general, that's the case. That,
yeah. Well, that, especially when you're talking about behind the scenes people. Mm-hmm. So, like, and that's what this is the shadow government. They're behind the scenes and they have our best interest involved.
Yeah. The background of this whole episode is going to be going off.
My bad. I muted it.
the thing that McLaughlin said, I may be pronouncing his name wrong. I think it's McLaughlin. But anyway,
I think that's right.
that he said, and I laughed out loud when I heard him say it. He's you know, he's talking about these intelligence people and said, you know, and talking about the CIA specifically. Yeah. And he says, again, quote, they're institutionally committed to objectivity and telling the truth. And exactly. That's yeah. that's the correct reaction. Is that that's the most absurd thing you've ever heard. The CIA is absolutely committed to telling the truth. And I thought about...
so many examples.
Yeah, Pompeo, Mike Pompeo, who's another yeah. former CIA director.
Yeah.
He was given a speech. It was like a... Or maybe it was a Q&A at some college or something. I can't remember. This is like a year, maybe even 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, he was a West Point grad.
Okay.
So he was talking about that, you know, the motto at West Point is, I will not lie, cheat, or steal.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, I'm going to quote again.
Okay.
He said, quote, I was a CIA director. We lied. We cheated. We stole. We had entire training courses.
And I believe that. I expect no less from the CIA. I mean, I don't. I mean, that's what they are.
Yeah.
I mean...
And so the idea that, and essentially what McLaughlin was saying is that that they were trying to defend the Republic by removing this dangerous president.
Yeah.
And that's not their job.
No, absolutely. Well, it's not their job in this country.
Well, sure. Yeah, I would say that's not their job in general, but...
Well, I mean, what else have they ever done?
Yeah, that's
I mean,
true.
Like, that seems to be their central...
This is what they're good at, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that if you're okay, regardless of what you think of Donald Trump,
yeah.
That you should consider what it means that the intelligence community might decide that the duly elected president of the United States, the person that the people elected, isn't the person that should be in that office and can work to remove that person.
Exactly.
And see how you feel about a bunch of unelected bureaucrats
making those type of decisions.
Exactly. Deciding who should really be in charge and whose policies should be followed. Because that was another thing. This guy Vindman,
yeah.
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman that testified this week,
okay.
He said something in the testimony that they released.
Yeah.
He said something along the lines of that the president was working against the policies that the foreign policy establishment felt were the right policies, and so he was doing what he could to prevent the change in policy. Again,
well,
that's not his job.
And by the way, I don't doubt for a minute that Trump is doing that. And guess what? The people elected him to do that.
Yeah.
He ran on that.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he's doing something he didn't run on. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what the people put him in there to do.
Yeah, exactly. He was very clear during the campaign that he wanted to be friends with Russia.
Yeah.
And I want us to be friends with Russia, too, because between the U.S. and Russia, that's 90% of the nuclear weapons on this planet.
Exactly.
Like, do we really want to be enemies with these people?
Yeah.
Besides, he was always talking about, like, his real enemy was China.
Yeah.
That was clear. I think we ought to be friendly with China, too. But
yeah.
At the very least, he was promoting this idea of being friendly with Russia so that we don't force Russia and China into an alliance with each other.
Yeah, because that's the worst thing that could happen for us.
And so, you know, we're going around and we're overthrowing governments and being the bully all over the planet. Meanwhile, like, Putin actually has been making friends here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, they're going and negotiating places. Like, he's making friends and we're overthrowing governments. And in the long run, who do you think is going to win?
Exactly. Yeah.
The person
with the most friends is going to be the person holding the cards.
Yeah. The big dog can lose to the 8 smaller dogs.
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
yeah.
You know, just keep that in mind. But that's the main thing, right? Is that this idea that Trump was elected running on this idea of what he's trying to do. And Ukraine actually said, like, there was some article that came out of Ukraine that they had done what they could to influence the election away from Donald Trump because he was talking about detente with Russia and letting Russia keep the Crimea.
Yeah.
And I don't know why we would even try to do anything about that. Like, Crimea was technically part of Ukraine, but it was one of these things where it was like, was it Khrushchev or somebody way back when, like, in, you know, some kind of, you know, drunken idea gifted Crimea to Ukraine, and it was during the time of the Soviet Union, so it didn't matter. It was like a completely meaningless gift.
Yeah.
It was just to, you know, placate somebody or something.
Yeah.
And so the Crimea is primarily ethnically Russian,
yeah.
And they were plenty happy when Russia came in. Like, it was a, this was a bloodless coup. This was a bloodless takeover. Yeah. They came into Crimea, and the Crimeans were like, oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
For the most part. So it's not like that they had to fight for the Crimea. Yeah. And it, like, the real disputed region in Ukraine is the Donbass region. And it, again, the reason it's disputed is because Ukraine claims it, but it's mostly ethnically Russian.
Yeah.
So they, most of them considered themselves Russian anyway.
Yeah.
And that's why it's in dispute.
Yeah.
So, you know, learn a little history and...
yeah.
Like, the idea, though, that the foreign policy establishment, you know, which is essentially a bunch of neocons at this point.
Yeah.
Neoliberals, and there's not really much difference between the two. The idea is still the same.
Yeah.
Are the people that are the foreign policy establishment. And this is a bunch of unelected career bureaucrats who have decided that this is the way things are. And the president got elected to change those things. And they're doing everything in their power to prevent that from happening.
Yeah. And they have from day one.
Yeah.
I mean, because all this is it's just more of the same. The, just like the, with the Mueller report. This is Mueller report 2.0.
Yeah.
is all
First
this
it was Russia,
is.
Then it was Ukraine. It's like, there's no getting out from behind this. And they're going to continue to attack Trump on this stuff for as long as he's in office.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
when
he wins
a second term, it's going to be the same way.
Yeah.
It'll be more of the same.
And I think unless there's a real economic collapse, he's going to win a second term.
Yeah.
And pressing an impeachment isn't going to help their position either.
No. All that does is rally the base.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all that does for Trump.
And when you jump from one thing to another, and as this information starts to get out and people realize that there's not a lot there.
Yeah.
That you have to make a bunch of inferences about what was said, what was meant by what was said. You can't take any of it literally.
Yeah.
Then, you know, they're, the people that hate Trump are, they're going to hate Trump no matter what. They're going to be opposed to him. But people that are on the fence.
But the people in the middle are the ones that are going to swap. Because they're going to realize pretty quick that there's just nothing there.
Yeah.
Unless there's something there we don't know about. But there's been no evidence that that's the case.
Yeah. And there could be, but they told us that there were going to be a bunch of indictments at the end of the Mueller report, and there were none.
We've heard the story before.
Like,
I mean, we have.
Yeah.
You know.
So this is just a play by the Democrats to keep this in the public.
Yep.
In order to try and, you know, rally support against Trump. And here's the real problem that they have in an election, is that the only thing that they're running on is not that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, that doesn't get people excited. People don't come out to vote for not that guy. People came out to vote for Make America Great Again.
Yeah, they did.
People don't come out to vote for, well, I'm not him.
Well, I still think that there's somebody else is going to end up getting in the race. Because I don't see Elizabeth Warren being the nominee. And right now, that's the direction it's heading.
But I'm so looking forward to debates between Donald Trump and either Elizabeth Warren or Joe Biden. Like, that will just be a comedy
hit. I'm telling you, if it's Warren, that's going to be insane.
Yeah. She's just not very charismatic.
No. And he will just devour her. He will call her Pocahontas all day, every day, and it will just be insane.
So let's try and shift gears
a little bit.
Yeah. You know, I guess maybe like talking about government incompetence, or maybe talking about corruption. We'll push the corruption thing a little bit longer, and we'll talk about government incompetence.
All right.
Because I think I got a good segue there.
All right.
So I read this article about Ring doorbells. Now, Ring was acquired by Amazon for like $1 billion a year ago or something like that.
Okay.
And Ring doorbells are really popular, right?
Yes, they are.
All over the place.
Me and you know firsthand how popular they are from going door to door.
Oh, yeah.
Half the doorbells we rang were Ring doorbells.
Yeah, that's true. So. I had forgotten about that. I was trying to push it out of my mind like all that time. There was an article out a month or so ago talking about Ring's contracts with various law enforcement agencies.
Okay.
All right. So and it doesn't sound like a lot, but this is not a good start from my perspective. They have more than 400 contracts with law enforcement agencies out of about 18,000 total law enforcement agencies in this country, which is kind of frightening in and of itself. But you're talking about all these local police.
Well, I was going to say, these are all local municipalities,
Yeah. And the agreement is that if there is a crime or a suspected crime in an area, that they will send out messages to, I think it's mostly related to this neighborhood app that they have. They'll send messages out, emails out to all the people within a certain radius of where the crime supposedly committed, asking them if they will share their Ring doorbell video with local law enforcement. Now, the good news on this is that so far in this experiment, people have mostly ignored them.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, so as long as I don't so much have a problem as long as they're getting the person who owns the Ring in their house, they're getting their permission, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but all right, so here's the deal with that, though. It's essentially, it's a way around the Fourth Amendment. This is the scary part of this.
Okay.
It's a way to ignore the Fourth Amendment, because if they request the video and it's voluntarily provided to them, there's no warrant necessary.
Yeah.
But it gives them this opportunity to do all this phishing stuff.
Yeah.
And like, and just start looking around to try and find a crime,
find stuff,
or so we're not follow a person.
We're not talking about reported crimes then.
Well, so, maybe not.
My assumption was something happened across the street, and so law enforcement's like, "Hey, can we get this video of what happened across the street?"
Well,
and then
sure.
You give them permission, yay or nay.
Yeah, I mean that's the idea.
Yeah,
but are there is there anything to ensure that that's what happened?
Well, no.
I mean, do they have to provide a case report to Ring? No, that's not going to be part of it, right?
No.
Like, so they can just start asking for stuff. No. And it's, you know, it's another one of these situations that we talk about with this kind of positive enforcement thing, where it creates confrontations.
Yeah.
Like, they're going out looking for crime
when there's plenty around if they just...
Yeah. And it gives the opportunity to investigate people, not crime.
Yeah.
But here's the other scary part. All right. Well, let me throw in this bit, too. Like, in the article specifically, they were talking about Fort Lauderdale PD, because that's where they were doing all these studies on how people were reacting to it.
Yeah.
The Fort Lauderdale Police Department helped install Ring doorbells at like lots of people's houses after raffling off the Ring system at things and giving them away.
It's giving them
so,
away.
So yeah, the law enforcement's like, here, just have this Ring doorbell. We'll help you put it in. Yeah. And so like it kind of makes you a little suspicious to begin with.
Yeah, there's no way I'd approve that. Not for my house. If I want that, I'll go buy it myself.
And Ring has gone out of their way. Like, there's stuff in these contracts about how they refer to the system and so forth.
Yeah.
So Ring has forbidden law enforcement from referring to the videos as, quote, surveillance.
Yeah.
Because it could, and this is actually a quote from one of them, it could flag user privacy concerns.
Yeah.
Wonder why.
I guess it should, yeah.
And remember, Amazon is also one of the leading developers of the law enforcement's facial recognition software. They probably acquired Ring doorbells because it gives them a whole bunch of data to work with for this facial recognition stuff.
Probably.
And so just think about that, too. Like, this is not your private video coming from your front door. Like, Amazon is almost certainly using it.
Oh, yeah.
The other scary part of this, like the flip side, besides the idea of just them, like, you know, for example, I send a nasty letter arguing about some foreign intervention to Bradley Burns' office.
Yeah.
Because that's never happened.
Because you do that, like, once a week.
Not once a week. And so they know my address because I have to put it in when I send them anything so that he knows I'm a constituent, right?
Exactly.
So anytime I submit anything to them, I have to put my address so that they know whether they can ignore me or not, essentially.
Yeah.
So they know my address. Well, maybe they just start, you know, requesting information from this area so that they can track my movements.
Yeah, see what you're up to.
Yeah. And so you have that to be concerned about. And I just don't have faith in the government, especially after all this corruption talk, of them doing the right thing all the time. They're only using it when there's actual crime that was committed and, you know, that or reported, whatever.
Yeah.
And then the other side of this, though, was that some of the cities that they contracted with requested the name and address info for all the Ring owners.
Yeah.
Ring indicated that they were willing to provide that information.
Yeah.
So here's the other side of it, too, is like that, like I said, that they haven't gotten good responses. So they keep requesting these videos and people aren't providing
them. Just not giving them, yeah.
Well, now, potentially, law enforcement can tell who refused to provide videos to them.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And does that now make you suspicious?
Yep, now they're retaliated against you.
Excuse me. So I see a lot of problems with this, and I don't know how far it'll progress. There's certainly some...
I'll tell you, it will continue to progress, because what happens in a situation like this, you can't have a potential tool for law enforcement to use sitting there like that and them not find a way. I mean, it may take another 10 years or so, but at some point, law enforcement will get their full hands on this. And it wouldn't surprise me a bit if it gets to the point where you don't own the video anymore.
Well, you don't own the video now, I'm pretty sure.
Well, yeah, exactly. And so all it takes is for them to flip Amazon to continuously turn it over without your permission.
And these kind of big internet companies have done favors for governments all over the world.
Yeah. And there's no reason to think it'll be any different here, especially if, like you say, where you don't actually own the video anyway, where Amazon owns the video.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, you have no control over what they do with it anyway.
Mm-hmm. I mean, presumably, they would still have to get a warrant.
Yeah.
But we saw Verizon, years ago, didn't care that there was no warrants when they
blanket,
were providing.
Well, they were providing like blanket warrant.
Yeah, well, yeah, sure.
I mean, if you want to call that a warrant, we got a warrant for every cell phone conversation you have.
Yeah.
or text message you have. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, that's not fair.
So if they're already, if, you know, the federal government is already collecting all of your user data, all the emails that are being sent back and forth, all the text messages that are being sent back and forth, all the phone calls that are being sent back and forth, how's this going to be any different?
Yeah, it won't be. I'm glad to hear it hasn't already happened.
Well, it might have. I mean, I think specifically NSA probably has all this information because it is sent over the net.
Oh, I'm sure.
And like everything that moves across the net, as I understand it, is captured by the NSA.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's tinfoil hat stuff, but I don't think so.
I don't know. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me a bit.
So the other thing that it does is and this is just kind of typical of how things are going, because, media doesn't go out and investigate stuff anymore. They're not real. There are some still, but very little investigative journalism anymore. What happens is that the journalists go out to Twitter and they look and see what people are saying about things, or looking for videos of people that were there or whatever.
Yeah.
And this is, this is the same kind of thing for law enforcement. Like, oh, well, I don't have to go out and investigate any crime. We'll just pull a whole bunch of videos. We'll look through that stuff. That way I can keep sitting here at my desk and eating my donuts and,
Exactly.
Not have to do any legwork.
Not have to go actually physically go check this out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, this kind of reliance on... And so how do we fix it? Like, we move away from government law enforcement.
Yeah.
And this is one of those crazy things libertarians say.
We got a segment coming.
Yeah. But I think this is a good place to talk about it, because... the idea, this is one of those things that when you say, well, you privatize law enforcement, people that, even libertarians a lot of times are like, well, you can't really.
Can't do that.
Yeah. First off, we already do. There's private security
everywhere.
Now.
Yeah.
And the reason there's private security is because it's more reliable
than public
security.
And it's focused on your area.
Yeah.
Like, so if you hire private security for your hotel or whatever the case may be, they're dedicated to protecting your property.
Right.
They're not spread so thin that they're not protecting, that they're just kind of out writing speeding tickets and crap.
Yeah.
You know?
So if we take a step back from law enforcement specifically to other public services, we've got a good example right now with all these fires that are going on in California.
Yeah.
So, and And this is an example of like one of the models that libertarians have proposed for law enforcement, which is this idea that, well, maybe insurance would start purchasing, using your premiums that they charge to hire security to protect the various properties. Well, what's happening out in California now is that some of the insurance companies on their, right now it's on their like really expensive policies. People can pay extra. And the insurance companies are hiring private firefighters.
Yeah.
And the private firefighters are going out and they're rescuing specific properties, or they're, you know, protecting specific properties. Then this is somehow like really a terrible thing according to the actual public services.
Yeah.
But they are coordinating with the public fire departments and so forth.
It's not like they're rogue agents just riding around in a fire truck.
Now the police were saying, well, you know, the real problem is if they get into trouble, then we have to go out there and help them. And that takes resources away from other things. Yeah. It's like, it takes resources away from other things to go do something that you weren't...
should be doing anyway.
Who else is protecting this?
Well, yeah, because that's just a crazy thought in general, because the whole idea that, well, these people are over here fighting this fire, and they've gotten in trouble. Like, if it was your own firefighters, you'd go help them, right?
Right.
Like, so what's the difference?
Yeah.
Like, they're still firefighters. Like, they're still out there fighting a fire.
Yeah.
Whether or not they're being paid to do it in a specific place should be irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they're even there puts more firefighters on the ground.
Exactly. They're helping out your public service because your public service can't provide enough coverage.
Exactly.
So they're out there providing more coverage.
Yeah.
And the people that they're helping are paying for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So who cares?
Yeah. Like, how is this a bad thing?
Exactly. And so, of course, you know, the police guys were like, well, they'll go out there and they'll protect a specific property while the property next door burns down. Well, then I was listening to some interviews with some of these private firefighters, and they're like, well, that's not the case.
Yeah.
If the house next door is burning, it's a threat to the house that we're protecting.
Exactly.
we'll protect the neighbors' houses and so forth. What they're saying is that they won't go blocks over to help some random house, you know.
Because they're focused on the house that they're being paid to protect.
But you know what? If that person purchased their services, they would.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Exactly.
And it brings up some other things. Like, this is another one of those things that probably the problem is it's exacerbated by government interference anyway, like the whole wildfire problem. Because this isn't something new, and as much as they want to blame it on climate change, California has been on fire for its entire history, pretty much. This is just part of the natural ecosystem, these fires, and all these ecosystems developed through fire.
Yeah.
So they can recover from them. And so you have all these problems because they are trying to prevent fires anyway. So they did fire suppression right?
Yeah.
And so they would go out there and they'd put out these fires just as quickly, any fire, put them out just as quickly as they could.
Yeah.
And so then all this, all these little trees and detritus and shrubs and leaf litter and whatever isn't burning off.
It's building up.
Yeah. So next year when you have a fire, it's a little bit harder to stop because there's more fuel.
Yeah.
And so you stop it again, and now there's more fuel for the next year. And it keeps building like this.
So
and
then it sounds like the answer would be like controlled burns.
Well, they did that for a while too. They were like, oh, okay, well, maybe these low intensity fires are actually good for the environment because they burn off this stuff on the ground. Burn off all this fuel on the ground, and that's fine. So what we'll do is we'll do controlled burns.
Yeah. They do that around here.
Yeah. Well, you don't have humidity.
Yeah, we don't have the problem, but I'm just saying, like, but we do have controlled burns. I see it all the time.
Yeah. Then they were saying, okay, well, you know, we'll just allow these low intensity fires and we'll control them and we'll just burn them off in certain places and, you know, we'll keep all the big stuff around.
Yeah.
But then they started having more trouble with these high intensity fires where, you know, these hundreds of feet of flame, you know, burning down everything. And so they were like, okay, well, this is what we'll do. And here's the scandal part of it, the scam of it, as far as I'm concerned anyway. So the land management agencies were getting extra money from the government to go out there and mark trees to do what they called a thinning the forests.
Yeah.
And so they would go out and they'd mark trees and they'd bring loggers in to cut down specific trees to try and, again, create less fuel and have them pick up logs that are laying over and old dead trees and
clean up the woods.
Yeah, things like that, right?
Yeah.
To try and prevent these high intensity fires and still allow the low intensity fires to burn.
Yeah.
So the logging companies are making off well, and these land management agencies, they're taking money from the government to go out and inspect and mark trees and what have you and figure out where they need to bring the loggers in to do this stuff.
Yeah.
And then they're selling off the logs to the loggers. So they're using that money then to pad their own accounts. Right?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But the truth of it is that the high intensity fires are part of it too.
Yeah.
And these old growth trees and so forth that they were selling off because they fetch a high price.
Yeah.
Are kind of fire resistant.
Yeah.
And the thinning wasn't really helping things, and it was creating biodiversity problems because when these high intensity fires happen,
yeah.
They burn off these big trees and, there's logs laying over and like a whole bunch of stuff. Well, actually those areas within a year or two yeah. are the most biodiverse areas in these forests.
Really?
Because once they burn off all this high stuff, all the little stuff could start to grow. So you get a bunch of flowering plants in there and it draws in the insects
yeah.
and then the insects draw in the birds and then, and
so
they have all this
feeds on itself.
Yeah. And these old growth trees that are dead that they were selling off. But these old growth trees that are still standing because they can survive the fire,
yeah.
They provide really good habitat, like homes, essentially, for, various kinds of birds and rodents and, all these kind of things. So
yeah.
This is actually like a really important part of the cycle of life out there that the government has been in there trying to prevent over and over again.
Yeah.
And the more they prevent it from happening in the natural way, the more intense these things become when they actually get ignited.
When something happens.
The other thing that I read that I found not surprising, but really interesting,
yeah.
Was that all of what they were doing to try and control various forested areas in terms of removing fuel and thinning the forest and so forth,
yeah.
Like less than 5% of it was anywhere near residential areas. They're like going out into the middle of nowhere and doing this.
Where the fires wouldn't hurt anybody anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so it seems like you could do a much better job because you can actually like create breaks
yeah.
that inhibit the...
That are solid breaks.
Yeah, that inhibit these fires burning through these residential areas.
Yeah.
If you had concentrated all that stuff like within a few hundred yards of residential areas, you
yeah.
probably could have prevented most of these fires from really threatening any residences.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, they were just out in the middle of nowhere doing this.
That's your government for you, man.
Yeah. And then they sit back and they complain about how
climate
these private change. Firefighters.
Yeah.
If you really want to get the tinfoil hat on, this idea of climate change is the thing that you can use to get people to get together and say we need government to do something about this. Like
yep.
this is such a big problem that only government can fix this problem.
Yeah.
And so we hand over all this authority and liberty to the government so that they can do what they can to save us.
Yeah.
But it's a problem of their own making, and it doesn't have anything to do with climate change.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. This is an old problem. Yeah. I mean, California was burning down before the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
It's just part of life out
just
there.
Just how it is, yeah.
And they're being more intense or bigger or whatever, it doesn't have to do with climate change. It has to do with their interventions to try and prevent
with
it in
how,
the first place.
How they've handled things, yeah.
yeah.
Wow.
And I'm not feeling well, so I'm hoping that we can kind of stop there.
Yeah, I'm about ready to wrap up myself, man.
Okay.
I'm just kind of beat in general.
So we put in a good amount of time here, so I don't feel like I robbed you guys out there.
Yeah.
But I'm sweating now, and I really want to get up and get out of here. So I hope you enjoyed it anyway.
Yeah.
Learn something. Look up that stuff about how wildfires really work.
Yeah.
It's interesting anyway.
Yeah.
And I've
always heard that a big part of the deal with the fires in California was just mismanagement of mm-hmm. the wildlife in general.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that just kind of plays right on into what that. So.
Yeah. Well, and it fits in perfectly with the state with the most intrusive government, right?
Yeah. I didn't even consider that, but you're right.
So, hopefully they get a handle on it. It's not that I don't care. I think it sucks that people are losing these properties.
Yeah. Well, and the thing I saw recently is they can't get them insured now. Like, they've pulled all of this coverage away. And, so people have these thousands and thousands of dollar houses, and they can't even get insurance on them.
Yeah.
And they have to have it for their mortgages and stuff. Like, it's crazy. It's a mess.
I mean, that's what happened here too with hurricanes after the government got involved.
Exactly. Well, and that's when I was hearing about that report about the insurance, that's exactly what it paralleled it to, was the same thing with us.
Like, hurricane coverage here is insanely expensive at this point. Yeah. And, truthfully, the only way you can get it is through the government at this point. There's no other way. I mean, you can do wind stuff, but...
Yeah, it's not the same, yeah.
Yeah. So, and that was the idea with the law enforcement thing, too, is that, insurance companies would rather pay to secure the property than have to pay to replace things. And it's the same thing with these fire departments or the private firefighters and the insurance companies. It's cheaper for the insurance company to pay those guys to go out there and protect those multi-million dollar homes than it is to try and replace that multi-million dollar home.
Exactly.
And this is a fine model.
Yeah.
And then also, this is an important point. I said we're going to end this, but we're...
Here we go again.
Yeah. What's the important point, Gary?
Oh, I don't know.
I distracted myself.
you didn't send it to me.
Is that they're accountable.
Oh, yeah.
Because we talked about it on this program in the past. Law enforcement is not required to help you.
And they're not accountable to anybody. And that's a good point I hadn't considered, especially with the private firefighters. And even if you use private security and stuff, they are accountable.
Yeah.
If you're paying them to do a job, they've been paid to do a job.
Yeah.
And if they don't follow through with that, then there's repercussions for that. Mm-hmm. So there's all the more incentive for them to do it right.
Yeah. And if you're thinking, how could I afford this kind of thing? Just think about how much more money you'd have if you weren't paying taxes for the government to not help you.
Well, that's just it. And that's the other thing you have to consider with something like this is, you'd be paying for the services you want and you wouldn't be paying for the ones you don't.
Yeah.
And it's simple as that. I mean, if you can protect your house by yourself, most of us here in Alabama can, then maybe you don't need to hire private security.
I've seen house fires plenty of times where... old man was standing out in front with his garden hose, just spraying that thing down, and neighbors were coming running up with buckets. I mean, it's not unusual.
I mean, that's the true first responders right there. Yeah. You talk about the first responders, that's the guy next door is the first responder.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So the accountability is an important part of it, and if you're paying for that and. So at first, probably these things would only be the high end policies. I mean, it's certainly the case right now. Yeah. But as they hire more and more of these people, there's a economy of scale.
Yeah.
And so you pilot the program, you get the infrastructure in place, it becomes cheaper to offer it. So then, instead of just the ultra wealthy.
The more people you pull in, the more it feeds off itself anyway. It hits a point where it's okay, well, now that we've scaled it up, we need to get more policyholders. So you start providing more to more people.
And this is how market solutions work, is that, maybe initially it's only available to the ultra wealthy.
Yeah.
And as you get more of them on board, and they're essentially providing the investment capital for the company to expand and improve its systems and lower costs.
Yep.
And then it's not just the ultra wealthy, it's the rich too. Yeah. And that's a whole bunch more money that comes pouring in to help them develop the systems. Yep. And then after some time, it's the middle class that has access to it too.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, everybody can afford it.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, market always has the answer. It may not be as quick as you want,
but it's there.
And it's more efficient.
Yeah. Oh, every time.
Yeah.
Every time. There's more accountability, just like you had said.
So we'll definitely end it there. And this time for real.
Yeah.
So I hope you enjoyed it. And until next time, follow us on Facebook and subscribe on iTunes. And, of course, you can always check our website at thelibertymike.com. all the stuff ends up there at some point. Yeah. Actually, it ends up there first.
Yeah.
That's the first place it goes.
It's true.
Like and share and, you know, tell your friends about us and whatever. We'd like to get it out there, obviously, to more and more people. And as usual, if you have any questions, you can send them to me. I'm Michael at the Liberty Mic. There is a Larry at the LibertyMic.com also. Yeah. I don't think he checks it.
I don't know that I even have access to it. Maybe. I don't know. Haven't checked it for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, we can fix that some other time.
Yeah, not tonight.
and join us next time when we finally get this right. In the meantime, try and stay free.
Train how you fight.
Ciao.
Later.